listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The U.S. media on Friday was indeed almost like a parody of itself, with Russia, Russia, Russia blaring across the mediascape. For example, the New York Times on Friday had as a headline story, Russia wormed its way into access at power plants, according to the U.S. Another front-page story at the Times was, Mueller orders Trump business to surrender files on Russia. But the big story is the accusation by the U.K. that the Russian government ordered and implemented the poisoning of a Russian defector in the U.K., For more on that, we spoke with analyst Mark Sloboda, who's a senior lecturer in international relations at Moscow State University. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday.
This whole incident over the supposed assassination attempt against a former Russian defector, Sergei Skripal, who has been living in the United Kingdom for a number of years, has really... it further enforces what has been really a quite dominant narrative in Western events, both in Syria, previously with the case with Litvinenko, and now is for the West to make very inflammatory accusations towards Russia without providing any substantial evidence to back these claims up. And they seem deliberately designed to inflame tensions. I mean, literally to the brink of world, what has to be described as World War III at this point.
Yeah. They're trading. Let's see, we're going to do this in Syria. If you do that, we're going to blow you out of the sky, kind of stuff.
It's really bizarre. because I think first we have to give some background, you know, to the individual involved and what's going on here.
Good idea.
Sergei Skripal, he was a an intelligence officer in the Soviet military intelligence agency, the GRU. Then he continued on in the Russian agency of the same name, which continued after the fall of the Soviet Union. And somewhere along the line, evidently, he basically sold himself. He was a walk-in, and he served as a British double agent in the GRU, and specifically he revealed the identities of numerous Russian and other Soviet agents to the UK and, you know, to the larger West through that. He was caught in 2002. He was charged, and then he ended up being sentenced for 18 years in prison, which is actually a relatively light charge for such an offense. You could imagine the U.S.
the death penalty, yeah.
Yeah, put him in prison for life, or, you know, try to execute him, or so on. So, but he was released after serving just 4 years of his sentence in one, you know, of a quite normal spy swap. Right. And this was actually the spy swap that involved these. There's not to call them any type of successful spy, at least Anna Chapman and these other, people that were trying to assume Western identity and just basically meeting people in bars and so on.
It was kind of right.
Kind of laughable, actually. Low level stuff. So he served time in Russian prison. He was officially pardoned by the Russian president and exchanged in a spy swap. And he has since been living in the United Kingdom for essentially over a decade now. He's been going about his business. Of course, he has cooperated regularly with British intelligence. That is, you know, assumed with these type of spy swaps and everything. His daughter still lives in Russia and is active in liberal politics, you know, opposition politics in Russia. This has been going on, you know, all this time. And then suddenly, you know, just over a week ago, she was visiting him in Salisbury, where he lived, they collapsed at a park. Hmm. Nearly instantaneous reaction from the British government, bringing people on scene. There was also a police officer supposedly affected who responded to the emergency, although he supposedly wasn't exposed by them, but after he went to their house afterwards. The details of that are not clear. Meanwhile, medical personnel, doctors who worked on these two suspects, these two victims, shall we say, alleged victims, they reported no ill effects.
Right.
They reported that nothing happened to them personally. They, you know, as first responders, did not see any signs of a chemical or nerve agent type of attack, and evidently one of those involved even gave mouth to mouth resuscitation to Skripal's daughter, and nothing happened to her. So these are side facts, interesting. They can't tell us anything definitive, but interesting.
It's interesting that apparently the exposure took place at his house, according to what they're saying, and yet it hit both of them immediately, more or less simultaneously.
Hours later.
Yeah, hours later. That's kind of odd all by itself.
It is. I mean, these don't tell us anything definitive, but they do raise a number of questions in the narrative we're being fed. The official response from the British government is that they were exposed to a military-grade nerve agent of a type developed by Russia. Those are the specific words of a type developed by Russia. Now, ever since then, the government and the British press have gone on a full-scale attack on Russia, saying that they were responsible for this. All right, they have a clear motive, which is revenge, supposedly, even though he was served time in a prison, was exchanged in a spy swap, then lived in the UK for over a decade. So suddenly, Russia wanted revenge on him. And they wanted revenge on him, evidently, in the most spectacular way possible. What is essentially what certainly is being called by some a weapons of mass destruction attack on the United Kingdom, a member of the Security Council and another nuclear power, right? So evidently Russia, the narrative is evidently Putin, who just to exercise his right to act with impunity did this in the most spectacular way possible, using what has been described as a type of nerve agent, Novichok, whose existence has never actually been proven even, that supposedly is 10 times more lethal than VX, although none of the three people who were supposedly exposed to it have somehow died yet. And in fact, the police officer is described as, you know, in a serious condition, but stable and responding to his family. That is also strange. But they immediately, a full court press to blame Russia, and to the point of taking they issued a 48-hour ultimatum that Russia needs to explain itself, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially, that Russia needs to prove itself innocent, reversing the burden of proof here. There is no evidence been presented yet. No names, no places, no types of how, no analysis of the chemical. They've refused to release sample of the chemical to Russia. Evidently, they haven't even transferred it to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons yet, and they seem to be not following the guidelines, according to the OPC, the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, for reporting and investigating such a type of attack. There's a procedure involved, and they're not following it. It's all rather strange, and that they just their response is that it just couldn't be anyone else. It's obviously
right. Russian. Which is, you know, we can examine that too. We will in a minute. But let's just point something out here. The presumption of innocence. On the point of the presumption of innocence, it's been 800 years. This is English common law. This is Magna Carta. That is so fundamental to British law. And yet there's no presumption. There's nothing. There's no opportunity to examine the evidence or even it's all secret. But you did it.
This is politics and even more geopolitics. And it's not like we haven't been lied to by Western governments before,
no.
including the British government, about weapons of mass destruction claims, chemical weapons. Right?
Yeah, let's get Tony Blair out. Yeah, let's wheel out Tony Blair.
I mean, it's happened a lot more recently than that. With
right.
Syria and so on. So this is all rather. And France initially put out a statement saying that they wanted no part of this, that the UK needed to provide evidence. And then less than a day later, it was like 12 hours later, suddenly, evidently, some screws were put to Macron, and the allies, the United States, France, and Germany, with the United Kingdom, put out a joint statement yesterday saying that there could be no other plausible alternative.
Right.
Not that they've looked at the evidence and they agree that it must be right, because there is no evidence yet. And this is all rather strange, because there is no evidence that these nerve agents definitively that they exist. Supposedly, all of this information comes from a Soviet defector, a Vil Miryazanov, actually an Uzbek, a Soviet dissident, a chemist who defected to the United States and was involved in the program, and now lives in $1 million house in the U.S. And not only did he supposedly provide the U.S. information on this, But he also published it and the chemicals and the whole chemical chain and diagrams and everything of supposedly what is involved in making this, because according to him, it was designed, one, to include chemicals that weren't actually prohibited by the Organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons that Russia is a signatory to, and that could be made basically by anyone, according to him, with a decent laboratory. He published this book with the whole formula and everything on Amazon. You can buy it for $8.16 right now.
And make your own at home.
Make your own Novichok. But the Organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons says that they have no definitive information that this chemical actually exists. And they have all the information that this defector provided. There are Americans and British, involved in their military chemical weapons on the scientific advisory board and they just put out a statement a few years ago saying that they don't know that this stuff exists. They have no evidence of it to confirm it. What's more is that this whole incident took place just 8 miles from Porton Down in the UK, in Salisbury, which is the UK's and Western Europe's biggest center for producing and investigating chemical weapons. Right. Of course, they say they only make chemical weapons in order to figure out how to treat them and identify them and so on. But as of just last year, there was a paper issued by the scientists at Porton Down by Robin Black that they have no evidence that Novichok exists. Right. The essay, Robin Black. As recently as 2016, Dr. Robin Black, head of the detection laboratory at UK's only chemical weapons facility, Porton Down, published an extremely prestigious scientific journal that evidence for the existence of Novichoks was scant and their composition unknown. In recent years, there has been speculation that a fourth generation of NERJ agents, Novichoks, which means newcomer, was developed in Russia, well, actually the Soviet Union, beginning in the 1970s as part of a Foliant program, with the aim of finding agents that would compromise defensive countermeasures. Information on these compounds has been sparse in the public domain, mostly originating from a dissident Russian Soviet military chemist, Vladimir Mirzanov. No independent confirmation of the structures or the properties of such compound has been published.
Oh, really? That's all?
Yeah. The essay, the OPCW's scientific advisory board says that it has insufficient information to comment on the existence or properties of Novichoks.
Okay, so let's recap for a second. So this guy and his daughter collapse in a park. There's a cop and the first responders deal with them. The cop supposedly gets sick. Nobody else does, including the person that gives the daughter mouth to mouth. No one's died. This takes place 8 miles from the chemical weapons center of Europe, Western Europe, and, essentially.
By the way, no substantial medical reports, unlike happened with the Litvinenko incident, have been released on anyone who has supposedly been affected.
Right. The accusation immediately is made that Russia did this, that they poisoned this guy who was ex-Soviet intel and a defector, and that they used this particular agent. Russia denies it. They're given an ultimatum to respond with the correct answer in 48 hours. Rather than going to the chemical weapons regime, the UK goes to the UN Security Council on Wednesday and demands some kind of unspecified action, including let's punish Russia publicly. There's a dressing down session and then a defense by Russia and China saying, okay, look, due process, show us this stuff. We're glad to see it and analyze it with you. This is the process that's supposed to be followed. By the way, you're supposed to be going to The Hague if that's what you think happened, because this is a crime that happened if these people were truly poisoned. Yeah. If they were poisoned.
It would be a war crime.
Right. Yeah. First, just a crime. I mean, if it's a poisoning in the UK, you do a criminal investigation. Is this person poisoned? Who poisoned them? What kind of poison was used? And then if it shows that there's some kind of foreign state actor, you go to The Hague. That's the process. And they all said no to that. Instead, The UK now says, the Foreign Secretary, Boris Johnson, Putin did this, ordered this personally. That's his assumption. He said, we assume that that's the case now. You have Nikki Haley going crazy
based
at the UN.
Based on nothing.
On nothing. And a demand for evidence again and again. And the only response was that towards the end of the Security Council meeting, the UK's permanent representative promised to do that, and then there's been no movement on that at all. So there's a naked accusation.
I think it has to be said that the British Minister of Defense has come out with a serious statement where he says that Russia needs to shut up and go away.
Yeah, I saw that.
Shut up. I mean, what kind of language is that?
I don't know. And how do you go away? Let's see. This is like 1/6 of the world's surface. Yeah. Let's pick it up and carry it to, what, another planet? Where are you going to go? It doesn't make any sense.
The UK and now the rest of these allies have demanded that Russia explain itself, you know, and provide a credible alternative. But at the same time, they refuse to release any samples of the chemicals and any type of evidence or reports that Russia would need to prove its innocence,
right?
You know, in any type of actual legal proceedings.
Well, just to prove what happened. This guy's sick. You did it. Oh, really? How? With this poison? Let me see the poison. Let's examine it. No, can't. It's a secret.
Now, one of my other problems with this, other than the fact that we don't know that this chemical exists, that the defector who supposedly gave information on it seems to be eccentric at the slightest. I mean, his comments to the press since have been, it must have been Russia or someone who read my book. That was his literal comment.
He said the second part. Yes. Also, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh yes, he said that, or someone who read my book.
When was the book published? How long ago was the book published?
I don't know. I've got
not in the last few days. This is, you know, it's
2008.
Okay, so they've had 10 years to read it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone can go and get the PDF on Kindle if you want. So, now my problem with this whole thing. First of all, if Russia took some kind of action to kill this ex-spy years after any useful information was already sucked out of him, after he had been pardoned and exchanged, well, first of all, that would basically end any type of spy swaps, because you're not going to make spy swaps, right? Russia has never done this sort of thing before, not with someone who was certainly not with someone who was exchanged as part of an official swap, because that basically is an approval on both sides,
right?
So that would be an entirely new type of behavior, right? That would be a break of trust, and it would end any Russia's chance to get any prisoners, any spies that were caught in the West, right? I mean, you know, we're spying on each other all the time, everybody, including the U.S. on the U.K. and on France and everyone else.
Yeah. Look, you know, ask Dilma Rousseff and Merkel. I mean, Obama was tapping their phones, so, you know, the allies.
Yeah, and we know that the CIA had infiltrated people from WikiLeaks in every French political party. Years and so on. So my other problem is that if you believe that Russia had a motive to kill him, and if this happened in less than 2 weeks before the Russian election, which is this weekend, and right before Russia's hosting the World Cup, when presumably as much as I disagree with the ridiculous spending that has gone on to put this on, when it's not going to get Russia any good press or feeling from anyone in the world, I think it's a big waste of money. But supposedly, the government would want to put on a good face for the world, and this happened just before the elections and just before this.
And the guy is a valueless target at this point, by the way.
Valueless, right? He's 66 years old, and has been long ago pardoned, swapped, served time in prison, and has been out of the, you know, the game for almost two decades.
And out of the country. I mean, he couldn't draw a skyline of downtown Moscow at this point, because it's changed so much since he's been there. He has no useful information.
And you have to believe that the FSB, you know, who would supposedly do this, or the GRU, or, you know, whoever you want to blame, are either rank amateurs, or that they are psychopathic madmen who would not only do this, but do it in such a way, using such a mythical, exotic agent, that
Right. It has to be you. It's your fingerprints. It has to be,
right. I mean, which is essentially their argument.
I mean, they've had more than a decade to off this guy, and they could do it next year or in July after the World Cup, for example. And there's no reason if he goes walking in the park that a mugger comes out, like it happens all the time, comes out and stabs him, shoots him in the head, pushes him in the river, whatever, instead of using this thing that everybody's going to say, Russia.
Rather, something quietly and efficient where the people who, you know, are defectors or possible defectors would still know the example would be set, but there would be no proof, no, you know, anything like that. No
signature.
No. This is like Litvinenko, again, a big glowing WMD sign leading back to Russia. It's all kind of James Bond, you know, villain-esque to me.
Right.
Now, Porton Downs, the British Chemical Weapons Laboratory, coincidentally just 8 miles away, you know, I told you they put out this report just a year ago saying they don't believe, they have no evidence that these chemicals even exist. It's all rather dubious. And then evidently, although there's no definitive word, that they've changed their position, suddenly the Telegraph has released information in the host of news reports that supposedly the way they identified it is Porton Down now suddenly has a sample of this. That's how they tested for it, which would, you know, reverse their earlier scientific claims, and that it was achieved by clandestine means, quote unquote.
So now, they have a sample. The UK government has a sample of this stuff 8 miles from the site.
That's what they're now claiming.
Right, 8 miles from the site, because that's the facility, you know, 8 miles from the site of the crime, quote unquote, and yet it's the Russians that introduced it there.
Well, it gets more kind of more ridiculous, more Kafkaesque, if you
possible?
Will, because one of Theresa May's accusations is that it could be no one but Russia, either the Russian government did it or Russia lost control of the agents and needs to account for it, which is rather absurd to accuse Russia of losing control when you yourself are now saying that you acquired a sample of it by clandestine means.
The one that's closest to the scene of the crime, by the way.
Yeah. So, but now let's assume for a second that this stuff does exist, right? And the claims that it could only be Russia are obviously false. Now, let's review who they continually make references to Russia, a type of nerve agent developed by Russia. Russia. This wasn't developed by Russia. This was developed by the Soviet Union. And the reason they continually say Russia instead of the Soviet Union would because then there's now 14 other countries that could have access to that chemical.
That's right.
Including
Ukraine.
Including the Ukraine, which obviously has a definitive motive further demonizing Russia and renewing the anti-Russia fervor because of of their conflict with their own people supported by Russia in the Donbass since they seized power back in 2014.
And that's been front and center again. I mean, they keep starting.
Certainly trying to bring it.
Well, the litany of crimes that they recite every time they have a press conference now begins with the illegal annexation of Crimea, quote unquote. Yeah.
Well, certainly not with the illegal overthrow of the democratically elected government of the Ukraine. It happened just before the referendum in Crimea to leave that mess. Now, other countries that would have it are the United States, because States cooperated with Uzbekistan to dismantle their chemical laboratories, where is supposedly this Novichok was made.
Right.
So now the U.S. and anyone the U.K. has the possibility of making it. Any of the former Soviet states has the possibility of making it. And if you believe the defector in the U.S., this Vil Mirzianov, who you know published on Amazon that supposedly the formula to it, anyone with a decent laboratory can reproduce it if they read his book.
Right.
So that pretty much blows away the accusations that there's no other plausible alternative, and it must be Russia, just based on the fact of what was used. And so far, no other information. No other evidence an investigation is still in the very beginning stages. Now, nothing else has been released. So why this rush to blame Russia? And the reason for that is partly geopolitics, of course, and partly domestic politics. You have a deeply unpopular British prime minister right now, unelected prime minister, who is struggling with Brexit negotiations, which are not going well, and trying to distract from domestic turmoil at home. And partly to do with this, you have the rise of a very far left Labour leader, hated by the elite of his own party, continually reinforced and supported by the party's base, Jeremy Corbyn, who in the past 2 months, there has been a full court press by the British media and the Tory party, which Theresa May, the prime minister, is a part of, to paint him as a Russian dupe, Putin's agent, a communist. The BBC just in the last 24 hours put out a news report about Jeremy Corbyn. And Jeremy Corbyn has says, you know, we can't make these accusations because we have no evidence yet. I don't say that Russia didn't do it, but we have no evidence and we can't make these claims. And for that, you know, done during Prime Minister's questions confronting Theresa May, he's even more being painted as a commie, as a Russian agent, so on. And so it all seems rather contrived, almost like this is a whole intentional process designed to prevent Jeremy Corbyn from being elected. And it must be said that, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's foreign policy would be a far bigger challenge to the British deep state than even Trump's election has been a challenge to the U.S. deep state. Jeremy Corbyn doesn't fly with these regime change, foreign military adventures, and things that have been going on. He disagrees with pretty much on the entirety of the course of British foreign and military policy. So,
and what he wants to do, and this is where we have to close because we're out of time, he wants to take the money that's been spent on the military-industrial complex there and spend it on satisfying the needs of the people at home. Yeah. And that is the biggest affront to the deep state there. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Trump says he wants to get out of Syria. Apparently, not everyone in his administration got that memo. Also, the latest twists and turns in the alleged poisoning controversy in the UK, and RT is again being targeted. Crosstalking some real news, I'm joined by my guest, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. We also have Victor Olevich. He is a political analyst as well as a leading expert at the Center for Actual Politics. And we have Dmitry Bobich. He is a political analyst with Sputnik International. All right, gentlemen, as always, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in time anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mark, let me go to you first here. We have President Donald Trump saying that it's essentially time for the United States to get out of Syria, kind of hearkening back to the old campaign days. But apparently, as I said in my introduction, not everybody got that memo in the administration. What's going on here?
We'll be coming out of Syria, like very soon. Let the other people take care of it now. We got to get back to our country, where we belong, where we want to be. See, that was the Trump that I remember from the campaign.
That people voted for, too.
Well, I don't know if they voted on Syria and foreign policy, but that is what his foreign policy platform was at the time. Now, this was immediately met across the press, led by the Washington Post, the New York Times, but even from people within his own administration, immediately trying to walk that back. right? They're like, oh, did you check that in with Mad Dog? Did Mad Dog approve that message, Mr. Trump?
What does this tell us about his administration, though? Yeah. Because there doesn't seem to be any coordinated policy. There seems to be no timeline as well. So, I mean, is this something that Trump just says because it was like at a rally, okay, to energize the base? Because this is a kind of a test of who's running foreign policy, Victor.
Read my lips. Mm-hmm. No new taxes, said George Bush Sr. during a Republican convention. One of the first things he did as president was he raised taxes for the American taxpayers. Politicians say...
I did not have sexual untruths
with that woman all the time. And to put it very shortly, in short, what Trump did was he said something that was not true. The United States is not planning to get out of Syria very soon or in a long-term perspective. The United States plans to stay in Syria as long as possible.
Even if the President of the United States doesn't agree, Dima.
The President of the United States doesn't say so, but most likely he does agree with staying.
For me, the reason why we're doing this is because I think it's a litmus test of if there's a real disconnect in words and in policy. And apparently, there is, Dima.
Basically, I was asked to comment on this by Al Jazeera. And they told me, it's not like in Russia where the president says something, he means it. It's a democratic country, you know. Yes, I said, yes.
Where the deep state runs things.
That's right. There's democracy.
I don't know about the deep state, but the ideology runs it. And according to that ideology, the United States and the EU should never, never make concessions. They cannot retreat. The problem with this ideology, it can only move forward. It can only attack. It cannot retreat.
One of the interesting things, Mark, we have John Bolton coming in. And I think we all know his long history of blunders and failed policies. But he is a big booster for interventionism. I mean, he essentially is associated with it. He'll want to stay in Syria. So on day one, North Korea and Syria are going to be on the table here. And they say they agree on a lot of things. I actually think they just agree on a lot of things.
Yeah, I think John Bolton probably did a facepalm moment when he heard Trump say this and questioned exactly what he was walking into. The one of the lines out of the Associated Press story on this was, alarm bells went off across the State Department and the Pentagon. Again, showing that Trump is obviously not on the same foreign policy and military page. In the pages of the Washington Post, our favorite neocon, Josh Rogan, the mouthpiece whenever the security state wants to say something, he wrote an article under the title, "In Syria, we took the oil. Now Trump wants to give it to, not to the Syrian government, but to Iran." Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the specter. We've long talked about this, how the neocons tried to shift the goalpost with Trump to raise the specter of Iran because of the hard on the Trump administration.
And this is what's going to happen, Victor. Yeah. This is what's going to happen, is that, because apparently Trump and Bolton are on the same page when it comes to Iran, this is how he's going to convince Trump that his Syria policy has to be an extension of the policy on Iran. That's how it's going to play out.
Of course, but it is hard to believe that Trump's words were sincere to start with. He probably did not mean one single word of what he said about getting out of Syria very soon. He has proved himself to be a president who says, promises a lot, makes a lot of promises, makes a lot of statements.
Under delivery.
Yes,
okay.
that have very little to do with reality or with even wanting to do that. Why he does that, sometimes bluffing, sometimes believing that that increases the effectiveness of his negotiating positions.
But the problem with that, Victor, I tend to agree with you, but the problem with that is that we do, at least at this point in time, we have these negotiations coming up with North Korea and South Korea. If the North Koreans are seeing this kind of bluster coming out of Trump, how are they going to trust any kind of deal? Making a deal with the Americans is hard enough.
Well, let me remind us all that the American Constitution says that the president determines the foreign policy. So if the United States had been run
except
by law...
Except for when it applies, when it has something to do with Russia these days, okay? The president doesn't.
But on many issues, as we see now, the United States is not ruled by the elected president. It is ruled by an unelected ideology. And with North Korea, it's the same as with the Middle East, The United States took a belligerent line. There are going to be, the military exercises are starting right now in South Korea. The aim is to forget all the symbolic achievements of a joint team at the Olympic Games, of a first visit by Kim Jong-un to China, the rapprochement. In the face of it, they have these new exercises.
Okay, we're going to keep an eye on that. I want to go to this poisoning case in the UK. It's falling apart. The official line is falling apart, Mark.
Well, I don't see that at all. We've just had an Easter miracle.
Oh, yeah. That's a good way of putting it. That's what we should call this program, the Easter miracle.
We have a Novichok. This is a word created by the West that has nothing to do with the supposed Soviet program, right? This supposed nerve agent, 10 times more powerful than VX. That's what we're told, right? So far, out of the three supposed victims of it, we've got a cop out walking the streets just fine talking to the press, and then the double agent, the British spy's daughter, evidently
miraculously.
We had a headline in the Telegraph, right? One day it was poisoned Russian spy and daughter should be allowed to die, says friend. 36 hours later in the Telegraph, Russian spy's daughter is conscious and talking nearly a month after chemical attack.
That's what I call a seasonally appropriate resurrection. Happy Easter, guys. That's what I call a seasonally appropriate resurrection. But it's not the only strange thing about this poisoning. Let me just give you all the versions that they had before. That Mr. Skripal and his daughter were sprayed by a passerby. That they were contaminated from a drone. That someone has inserted this this poison in his car. Now we find out.
And then there was a smeared door.
Now we have the smeared door.
Now we have the smeared door.
So they removed the door.
Yeah, and the door, they removed it. So we have no way to know where it was smeared from. From the outside or from the inside?
This is the
interesting
thing.
If from the inside, then someone familiar to the Skripal must have done
it. This is the interesting thing about this door theory, right? Because supposedly this is a contact nerve poison in some type of liquid or powder form on the door. They touched it. They supposedly left the house at 9 o'clock in the morning and didn't collapse in the park until 4 o'clock. So this is a nerve agent 10 times more powerful than VX that somehow has a 7-hour onset time.
Amazing.
And then you recover after a month with evidently no ill effects.
Victor, but the damage has been done. And the intention of this has been played out. Go
exactly.
Ahead.
Actually, from what Mark and Dmitry said, it becomes very obvious why the British denied Russian authorities, members of the Russian consulate, access to these Russian citizens. Yulia Skripal is a Russian citizen, by international law, they had to give access. Why wouldn't they want to give them access? Because we don't know what really happened to Skripal and his daughter, or if anything at all happened to
if
them.
If anything at all happened
exactly.
to them.
Exactly. So, but
maybe it was bad sushi. Who knows?
But or maybe it was something else that the British and the Americans
sure.
passed to them or didn't pass to them. Maybe nothing happened at all to them. We don't know. There is no evidence presented anywhere. But, as you correctly pointed out, what matters today is perception, not reality. Mm-hmm. And the perception is created by the massive anti-Russian propaganda, Russophobic propaganda in British, European, American press.
Because you have the U.S. State Department saying, we'll take the word of our British colleagues.
And today, the atmosphere is such that you could accuse Russia and Russians of any possible crime, of any possible violation, and unfortunately the majority of people in Western countries would be...
The majority of the media. I don't think a lot of people are buying on this. Go real quick.
With no evidence whatsoever.
I want to get both of you before we go to the break.
Well, I think it's just like the arson of Reichstag. It's still not clear who did it. You know, the Dutch radicals aided by the Jews, as Hitler said, or Hitler himself. The consequences are so terrible that people now are not even caring about what really happened with that Reichstag in February 1933. In the same way here, their attitude is like, let's move on. Okay, forget about that door. The Russians expelled 60 American diplomats. They're destroying our relations. Well, you sent 60
Russian
diplomats
first. Okay, we're going to talk about that in the next part. 30 seconds, Mark, before we go to the break.
Yeah, Heather Nauter talking.
There we go.
She says that Russia is a beast from the deep sea. This this. She obviously a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft. Well, has long arms.
Very literate.
Russia has lots of tentacles. There's a long history
this
of Russia being assaulted
by the Nazis.
From the imperial times, the communist times, the Nazis, and so on. I have only this to say to Heather. Fanaga Mlawaga Nafa, Cthulhu Ryla, Waga Nagal Fatagin. In his house at Ryla, dead Cthulhu sleeps, waits, dreaming.
Okay, on that point, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, gentlemen, let's switch gears here. We live in the age of something gate. Okay, so I guess we have tit for tat gate in the United States, based on what the British claim that we previously talked about in the first part of the program about this alleged poisoning. The United States has expelled probably the largest expulsion of diplomats, I think, on record here. And they also expelled Russians from the United Nations mission, which is, from what I understand, is against international law. Where's this? Why, Victor, and where is it going?
Yeah, well, first of all, the American action in expelling 48 Russian diplomats from Russian embassy and Russian consulates in the U.S. and 12 Russian diplomats from the Russian mission to the United Nations was prepared before the Skripal incident happened in Britain. Also, there is evidence that members of the State Department Crisis Center and members of the British Department of the State Department traveled to Russia before the Skripal incident actually happened and visited, had talks with American diplomats in Moscow. That is evidence of premeditation, of that this is a clear provocation that was coordinated between London and Washington. Now, as far as their actions, what drives them? So we see that we are in a new Cold War. Effectively, we are in a new Cold War with the United States. What are they trying to accomplish with this? First of all, they want to consolidate the European nations around them. And, of course, Britain, as America's
main ally,
you know, closest ally.
The special and relationship.
Yes, as a country that the United States frequently uses to impose its policies on other European states.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, this I agree. I think, you know, consolidating the North Atlantic alliance is really important because it is fraying, okay?
There are two other reasons, though.
Okay, but there's so much going on domestically in the EU, domestically in the UK, like failed Brexit in the European Union. You have countries like Poland and Hungary that are pushing back against this postmodernist image of what the European Union should be. And then, of course, you have blame Russia for everything that the Democrats and liberals have failed at in the United States.
And you see what happened here with some countries like Bulgaria, like Ireland, Austria. They tried to not take these measures, but some of them were forced to.
The issue was to show the North Atlantic unity. But Mark, it didn't actually show that. It actually showed the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to twist and pull, but obviously there were at least a handful of countries in Central and Eastern Europe.
It worked for the Irish.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right that there's a domestic element, particularly for the United Kingdom, behind all of this, and that's distraction from Brexit and trying to take down the left Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn at the same time. There is a British comedy skit, a show that aired 30 years ago, Yes, Prime Minister, that has a skit that seems almost to foretell this exactly. And it goes along, one of the Prime Minister aides says to him, "We should give them a story." "Like what?" "Start a war, that sort of thing." Well, they decide a war is too much. "Why don't you expel 76 Soviet diplomats? That has been our practice when we wish to ensure the press loses interest in something." A great headline for you. "Government cracks down on red spy ring. Very patriotic." It must be a story that nobody can disprove and which will be believed even if it's denied.
Perfect.
I think a hand in the glove, Prime Minister could not air.
Okay, we'll
today.
Make sure we get the link at the bottom of this for everyone to see. Go ahead, Dean.
How does the New York Times report on all of this? What are their findings? They found out, let me quote an article written by their veterans, by Peter Baker and Steve Erwinger. The U.S. has found out that a year of attempting to cooperate with Russia had not yielded much success. Which year of attempting to cooperate? Banning the Russian flag at the Olympic Games, accusing Russia of putting Mr. Trump in place. Great collusion, you know. Now Trump is expelling 60 Russian diplomats. That's a great agent, you know. Russia made Brexit possible.
It wasn't
as a result. Yes, as a result of the Brexit, Boris Johnson is in power in the UK.
Interesting.
Excellent agent. So I just feel pity, you know. It really hurts me that the old timers, you know, people like Steve Erwinger, who had the courage to contradict the official line in the U.S. on the Kosovo thing, you know, or on the invasion of Yugoslavia, he is now writing this nonsense about a year of attempting to cooperate with Russia.
It's simply that those that want to stay in the American mainstream media, they have to toe the line. They have to say these things. They understand it's not just us. I talk to European politicians, lawmakers. They understand. They understand that the Skripal case is a provocation.
It's a sham, yes.
But, of course, many of them simply cannot say it. They cannot say it because if they do say it, they will immediately be accused of being unpatriotic. They will immediately be accused of being traitors, and they will lose their political position.
Yes.
So they say what they have to say, that this provocation has nothing to do with reality, that Russia has nothing to do with the Skripal case, is obvious to almost everyone.
But then, this is one of the best examples I can think of where the real casualty here, Mark, is truth.
The Russian foreign minister, Lavrov, he said that privately, particularly European leaders are apologizing to him for what's going on. They say, "Yeah, we know this is all essentially fake,
and also
some kind of hoax." But the Americans, they're forcing it to us. We don't have a choice in the matter. They have no sovereignty. They are client states.
I would like to argue a little bit against this because that's what the Russian public also wants to believe. You know, in the Russian newspapers, they write that Merkel sent out the Russian diplomats because she bowed to pressure from the UK. Germany is 2 times bigger economically than the UK.
I don't buy that. I think she sees her political career
absolutely
on the line, and she is tearing a page from the liberals in the U.S. saying,
yes,
this actually works, okay? And I think that what they've done is just weaponized this
absolutely
thing here. All right, gentlemen,
really
important I want to talk about is that RT is being targeted again in the U.S., and when it was forced to become register as a foreign agent at the end of last year, RT was promised that its operations would not be hindered with this appellation. But it's not true. It's happening, Victor.
Yes, we started this program with Trump's words about Syria, which are not true. The words about FARA not affecting RT's future are not true. The words about the coming summit between Trump and the North Korean leader may likely not be true also. So, and it was pretty obvious from the start that the reason that they decided to use FARA against RT was to try to shut it down, to hinder its operations, to hinder the American people's access to RT. The American government simply does not want
and
American
putting
people,
restrictions on of freedom course, of
they,
speech.
They simply do not want American people to have access to alternative sources of information.
Well, they're on the wrong side of history. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, I mean, we keep hearing it from the United States, from the EU. We need to maintain dialogue with Russia. What sort of dialogue? Surrender or else. That's the kind of dialogue that they have.
Ultimatums.
They don't want to hear the other voice. That's why they are basically prohibiting the RT, basically silencing it, at least in the Washington region. This is the kind of dialogue that they want to have. I talk to you and you listen. This is the kind of dialogue that they want to have. In this situation, you know, Emmanuel Macron is going to visit Moscow, and he expels the Russian diplomats simply because something happened in the UK, something that looks very much like a provocation. Now, France is helping the UK to investigate this.
But Russia is part of this International Convention on Chemical Weapons. It has a legal right to be involved in that, but it's, the French not, are not involved in it but they're involved in the investigation.
Yes,
that doesn't make any sense to me.
Just imagine what would happen if a British citizen was poisoned by some substance in Russia and the British diplomats would not be allowed even to visit him or her, even to have if she can talk, you know, if Yulia Skripal can talk, you know, say a few words with her. That would not be possible. You know, there would be an outcry. They would view it as a casus belli.
Now her relative from Russia, Victoria Skripal, actually traveled to Great Britain to see her, and the British authorities now said that they will think about letting her see her close relative. And another lie, by the way, is what was said by the State Department about the expelled Russian diplomats, that Russia can replace them. What we have seen over the past year is that despite these claims by the State Department, when visas are being asked for the diplomats, when they cannot get accreditation. So they simply say, technically, yes, you can replace them, but we won't give you the right to get
him.
Right, exactly.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Heather Nauert, U.S. State Department spokesman again. She made it quite clear that if Russians want to improve relations, what they have to do first is acknowledge responsibility for the attack. Confess.
You have to acknowledge the guilt
from our narrative, right? And then, you know, they're scared. I mean, this whole thing with RT and everything, they question RT's slogan. That question more means that they're just trying to confuse the truth, which of course the other side of that, of course, is the assumption that what they're telling you, you know, remember the Iraq war, the destruction of Libya, so on, is the complete unvarnished objective truthiness. And frankly, I just don't
know. What it gets down to is really unfortunate is that it's RT against the Ministry of Truth. That's what it's getting down.
Of propaganda,
Dima's absolutely right. The biggest problem we face right now in journalism is there is no dialogue. No dialogue is permitted. If there's dialogue, that means you're committing appeasement, and appeasement is treacherous.
They just say that you don't qualify to be a journalist.
Yes, that's right.
If you don't agree with them, out of profession.
This is how it was during
the Cold War, before Detente. And we are getting back into that.
We had dialogue during the Cold War, gentlemen. We had treaties signed on arms control.
We had more dialogue after Detente.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.